And then I'd ask that you help me welcome our 10-minute speaker, Carolina.
Fall off the back, then it'll just be even more entertaining. No, I will laugh louder than all of you guys. I'm Carolina, I'm an alcoholic. So, what time is it so I can watch? Okay. So, like, I always, as this is in our readings, like, we all kind of came from maybe not the same places, maybe we didn't go through the same life circumstances, but we all had a lot of the same feelings and stuff. So, just kind of like a little backstory on me. I was born into the system. My mother was 15. So we went to group homes and stuff like that. I was in the system, came to a family when I was 2.5, got adopted when I was 6, into probably an even more troublesome family. abused in all of the ways, mostly by my adopted mother. We moved up here when I was in sixth grade. Been through a lot of things that I should not have had to go through as a child. My journey with alcoholism started with, like, at 12 years old with my adoptive dad's girlfriend. And I just seemed to love from the start, you know, they say addiction to whatever it is, food, drugs, alcohol, all the things happens at a young age. Like, I should have known, because I liked things that were bad for me. Like, by the time I had tried alcohol, I had already had some eating disorders. I had already struggled with self-harm, because that's kind of what I learned, was when I had big feelings, don't show them. Deal with them myself. And the same thing with alcohol. Like, it was my dad's girlfriend, and it was just ghetto white Russian. Like, it was just vodka and Nesquik powder, and that was it, and it was disgusting. But I like the way that it made me feel slash not feel. Already had going through so much abuse and all that kind of stuff. So it started with just at my dad's, and then it started when I lived with my adoptive mother. Kind of like a Stockholm Syndrome thing when they divorced. I was like, yeah, but she cares in her own way. And it became an everyday thing. And I remember going, you know, if you guys are familiar with 5150, going to a hospital and not knowing why I was so sick, and you never tell them the truth when you go in there, especially as a teenager. Do you drink or use recreational drugs? No. Why am I so sick? Why am I shaking? Why am I all the things? And I'm like, so what if I might have lied? And they're like, well, that could be a difference, but in my family, I never saw anyone stop drinking. They were functional. They went to jobs during the daytime, but at night that's all they did was drink. So I never saw anyone stop to ever hear about, you know, all the, I'm having a brain fart right now. Detox, there we go. Thank you, whoever said that. I didn't know that was a thing. I also didn't know that, like, AA, NA, all the A's were a real thing for, like, normal people. Like, I'd seen them in movies, and I thought they were just for movie stars. Which, you know, because again, none of my family ever went through that. I never watched anybody get sober. I never watched anybody do all that. That was just their excuse for, like, they come home when that, like, person at all leaves from their eyes, I'm in danger. So, like, it became a normal thing. And when I finally told somebody about all the stuff that was going on at home, I was put back in the system at 16 and aged out at 18. Had nowhere to go. Like, we went to, like, a transitional housing thing, but, like, they put you in there, and I didn't know how to drive, couldn't keep an appointment, didn't have a job, didn't know how to pay bills, so I wasn't meeting their program standards and became homeless. And what do? Like, me growing up, I was isolated. I was alone, and I made friends with only people that would accept me, which were the homeless people in the park. But they talked to me, and they liked me, and they were my friends. Especially when I had scholarship money. So, you know, that came my thing. And then I became homeless, and it just It went from alcohol to, you know, drugs and all the things. And while in there, as much as I wanted to be a mother and never wanted to be a statistic and I was gonna, you know, go to school and do everything different, I had my first daughter and she was taken by the system and I went off the deep end and she ended up being adopted out. And everything that I stood for, wanting to be different, became another statistic. Because I didn't know about things like rooms like this and everything. Even drug and alcohol, I was like, you can do groups, but you have to test clean first. You have to be clean and sober first. Well, how am I supposed to do that if I don't know how? And I can't join a group on like prevention if I don't start to begin with while being homeless. You know, obviously there's lots of traumas that I don't have to get into. But a month before my daughter turned one, I found out I was 2 months pregnant with my second. And I was determined to do everything in my power to not lose this one, because the first one killed me. It was an open adoption, so actually she should be coming the week after 4th of July, which I'm super excited about, because she's 10 now. And then my other one turns 9 on the 21st. And so I still didn't get that one ready, like perfect either, because I hadn't done the work. I had her, they took her, I was clean and sober. But it was one of those things they wanted to make sure damage control before it got far. And I proved them wrong. I started going to drug and alcohol while I was staying at a shelter and everything. My sobriety date is 5/6 of 2017. So I just celebrated 9 years last month. And yeah, and it's huge to be able to say that, like, I mean, it's not a whole lot of time, but to say that I got, like, that I was on nothing by the time I had my daughter and that she's never seen me under any kind of substance is huge, except for caffeine. Caffeine and nicotine are a little bit of a problem still. And, like, getting my life together was huge. Like I said, never paid a bill, never had a job, never did any of those things. You know, I went from the shelter to going to a residential, to going to a sober living, to running that sober living for almost 4 years for women and children. Became the house mom, and to say they're way longer than most, you know, normal people would care to live with five other women and their children with trauma. But I'm not normal and I never claimed to be. So it worked really well for me to like build my life and get my license and all these things. All these things that I've never had. I have, you know, I ended up moving on from there, doing another live-in job for Family Care Network for low-income families. And, you know, I've worked for adults with disabilities and all that kind of stuff. I've tried to live my life like the program, where not only do I make sure to follow my commitments, because I will be honest, like I told Jules, that like I am trying everything not to cancel on you day before. But I, like my shakes right now are not from public speaking as much as they are from nerve pain and everything right now. You know, go trying things. But I've, you know, I've lived my life like the program, you know. I've gotten help from that sober living. I got help from, you know, Tri-Counties Regional Center. So I worked for Pathpoint, which helped people from Tri-Counties Regional Center. I got help from Family Care Network, both through my foster parents and then also like as when I tried to be independent and everything. Like I've given back my life in like even working to go for these agencies so that like not only to give back, but also because I know what it feels like to be in those agencies and not feel heard, or to be in those agencies and not feel like the people who are helping me understand. Like having a drug and alcohol counselor that has never, you know, doing pogue with my child, with a counselor that never had kids and has openly talked like with her coworker, and we overheard, you know, can't wait to go home and open my bottle of wine tonight. It's really hard to take like relapse prevention advice from someone like that. So it's, you know, I try and relate to people the best I can, and like recovery's given me a life I never imagined. Like the first year, rocky. You know, they always say don't get in a relationship in your first year. I thought I mitigated that by just not being in a relationship. until I was told I might have had a problem with that too. You know how we do switch things up. And so then went on the other way because I am a pendulum and I can never get balance. My goal is to at least make 70-30 in my life when it comes to balance. I will never get to 50-50, but you know, I went from that to going on a 4-year celibacy run to, you know, fuck everybody. you know, but like also it gave me time to like, I had a few set of steps like while I wasn't doing anything with anybody else and where I had to actually concentrate on myself. And it did me good, you know, like I'm in a place in my life where, yeah, I do give back. I have sponsees, and those who sponsor know what that means. They don't necessarily work, and like I think I'm just their friend, but they call me their sponsor, even though we talk like once every 2 months, maybe. You know, I've done multiple sets of steps, and like life is better, as good as it can get, if not better than I would have imagined, because I just wanted to get clean. I never imagined I'd have, you know, a good partner and all that kind of stuff who like, and like good friends who understand some of my pain and stuff I go through now and help support me through it. Cause I was used to having people who wanted me for what I could do for them. And that had to be something that I'm still working on. Like self-worth is hard. That one takes a lot of sets of steps. Finding out that like, you know, worth versus what I can do. Especially when I can't do a whole lot anymore. It's one thing when I'm ADHD and I like to have 3 jobs at the same time and then the side jobs on top of that. So I'll do one and then I do a respite job and then I do another part-time and then I'd like tutor on the side. And that's kept landing me in the hospital for who knows what. And yeah, recovery is not all, I'll wrap it up in a second. It's like I'm looking. Recovery isn't all rainbows and butterflies. Before I ended up on the canes and stuff like that, I had 2 years of, you know, chronic pain to have surgery. And then all of a sudden, these last 4 years have been neurologic stuff where like, yeah, 2.5 months ago, I could go to the creek, I could go to the beach. And then all of a sudden, it just started with pain. And I've been on and off canes and walkers with my right now 8-year-old witnessing me falling or stuttering or slurring. While we still would get the workup for it, my partner and Jules have taken me to like UCLA or Santa Barbara for appointments. And, you know, it's not always rainbows and butterflies. They're looking into either MS or stiff person syndrome, which I've never heard of before. It's a mission, but I can stay here because I can work a program. And honestly, if I were to sprinkle any kind of recreational drugs, alcohol, anything on this, I don't think that the doctors would take me any more serious. Like, it's hard to find help around here with doctors, period. But even with all this, I can say we have a good spot. We have good people in our lives. We have people who know that I'm trustworthy, know that I can help. And honestly, always a work in progress, but like, I wouldn't give up my life in recovery for anything, no matter how much pain I'm in, no matter what I have to go through, because I can get through it. There's other people who have gotten through it before me, if I need examples. And I hope to be that person that, like, eventually people can talk to about stuff like that, too, and understand. That's all I got, because I did deliver. Let's give her another round of applause.